कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरी वरधारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरी वरधारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरी वरधारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरी वरधारी यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंज यशोदनंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरी वरधारी गोपी जन वल्लभ गिरी वर यशोदानंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोदानंदन ब्रज यमुना तीरावन चारी यमुना तीरावन चारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधव जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर श्री श्रीमद हिज डिवाइन ग्रेस एसी भक्तिवेदांत स्वामी श्रील प्रभुपाद की जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य अष्टोत्तर श्री श्रीमद भक्ति सिद्धांत सरस्वती गोस्वामी प्रभुपाद की रामाचार्य हरिदास ठाकुर की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की प्रेम से कहो श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधार श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद की वृंदावन धाम की जगन्नाथपुरी धाम की मायापुर नवद्वीप धाम की अनंत कोटि वैष्णव वृंद की निताई गौर प्रेमानंदे ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज ऑल ग्लोरीज टू द असेंबल्ड डिवोटीज All glories, all glories, all glories to Sri Guru and Sri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नारायणं नमस्कृत्यं नरं चैव नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं व्यासं ततो जायामुदीरयेत् नष्टप्रायेषु अभद्रेषु नित्यं भागवत सेवया भगवती उत्तमश्लोकैर्भक्तिर्भवति नैष्टिके। रीडिंग फ्रॉम श्रीमद्भागवतम कैंटो 4 चैप्टर 24 entitled Chanting the Song Sung by Lord Shiva, verse 26. Satan prapannarthi haro Bhagavan dharma vatsalaha dharmagya shila sampanna prita prita nuvachaha Satan prapannarthi haro Bhagavan dharma vatsalaha dharmagya shila sampanna prita pritan uvachaha Satan prapannarthi haro भगवान धर्मवत्सलः धर्मज्ञशीलसंपन्नान् प्रीता प्रीतानुवाचः सतान् प्रपन्नार्थिहरो भगवान धर्मवत्सलः धर्मज्ञशीलसंपन्नान् प्रीतः प्रीतानुवाचः सतान् प्रपन्नार्थिहरो भगवान् धर्मवत्सला धर्मज्ञशीलसंपन्नान् प्रीता प्रीतानुवाचः माताजी सतान् प्रपन्नार्थिहरो भगवान् धर्मवत्सलः धर्मज्ञशीलसंपन्नान् प्रीतः प्रीतानुवाचः सः लॉर्ड शिवा तान् them, prapannarthihara, one who drives away all kinds of dangers. Bhagavan, the Lord, dharma vatsalaha, very much fond of religious principles. Dharmagyaha, persons who are aware of religious principles. Shila sampannan, very well behaved. Pritaha, being pleased. Pritan, of very gentle behavior. Uvacha, talked with them. Her, in the past. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai. Lord Shiva became very pleased with the Prachetas because generally Lord Shiva is the protector of pious persons and persons of gentle behavior. Being very much pleased with the princess, he began to speak as follows. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead Vishnu or Krishna is known as Bhakta Vatsala. And herein we find Lord Shiva described as Dharma Vatsala. Of course, the word Dharma Vatsala refers to a person who lives according to religious principles. That is understood. Nonetheless, these two words have additional significance. Sometimes Lord Shiva has to deal with persons who are in the modes of passion and ignorance. Such persons are not always very much religious and pious in their activities. But since they worship Lord Shiva for some material profit, they sometimes obey the religious principles. As soon as Lord Shiva sees that his devotees are following religious principles, he blesses them. The Prachetas, sons of Prachinihibari, were naturally very pious and gentle. And consequently, Lord Shiva was immediately pleased with them. Lord Shiva could understand that the princes were sons of Vaishnavas. And as such, Lord Shiva offered prayers to the Supreme Personality of Godhead as follows. We will also see the translations for the following verses. Text 27. Lord Shiva said, "You are all sons of King Prachinibari, and I wish all good fortune to you. I also know what you are going to do, and therefore I am visible to you just to show my mercy upon you." Verse 28. Lord Shiva continued, "Any person who is surrendered to the Supreme Personality of Godhead Krishna, the controller of everything, material nature as well as living entity, is actually very dear to me." Verse 29. "A person who executes his occupational duty properly for 100 births becomes qualified to occupy the post of Brahma. And if he becomes more qualified, he can approach Lord Shiva. A person who is directly surrendered to Lord Krishna or Vishnu in unalloyed devotional service is immediately promoted to the spiritual planets. Lord Shiva and other demigods attain these planets after the destruction of this material world." Text 30. "You are all devotees of the Lord, and as such, I appreciate that you are as respectable as the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself. I know in this way that the devotees also respect me and that I am dear to them. Thus, no one can be as dear to the devotees as I am." Text 31. "Now, I shall chant one mantra which is not only transcendental, pure and auspicious, but it is the best prayer for anyone who is aspiring to attain the ultimate goal of life. When I chant this mantra, please hear it carefully and attentively." Text 32. Maitreya Uvacha. The great sage Maitreya continued, "Out of his causeless mercy, the exalted personality Lord Shiva, a devotee of Lord Narayana, continued to speak to the king's sons who were standing with folded hands. Om Agyan Timirandasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Bhishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamahiyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Juta Padakamalam Shri Gurun Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Raghunathanvitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadhutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakhanvitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindho Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gop Esha Gopika Kanta Sri Radha Kanta Namostute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Sri Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Aivacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha नमः ॐ विष्णुपादाय कृष्णपृष्ठाय भूतले श्रीमते भक्तिवेदान्त स्वामिनिति नामिने नमस्ते सारस्वते देवे गौरवाणी प्रचारिणे निर्विशेष शून्यवादी पाश्चात्यदेशतारिणे जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैता गदाधार श्रीपासति गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 रामो 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 हरे 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 कृष्णा वेलकम एवरीवन सो वी आर कंटिन्यूइंग टू डिस्कस द सॉन्ग सांग बाय लॉर्ड शिवा to the Prachetas, who are the sons of King Prachinibhari. So, we have so far seen how their father instructed Prachetas, because he was a Prajapati also. So, he instructed his sons to beget progeny. Progeny is secondary creation. Primary creation is the material manifestation, and then to populate that material manifestation, Lord delegates that to Prajapatis, starting with Lord Brahma himself. So, King Prachinibharishad requested his sons to beget progeny so that they could populate the universe, because that was their seva. So, how did the Prachetas respond to that? They humbly accepted the order of their father, but before engaging in seva, they first went for purification. They performed austerities for 10,000 years. So purification is necessary. That is what turns our action into seva. Nishkama karma leads us to a level of jnana, and from there we can perform a karma. Without purification, what we perform is karma, for swartha. After purification, what we perform is akarma, or seva, for Krishna. So that shift of motive happens because of purification of heart. And for that, it is required to practice our dharma. So dharma, and of course the highest dharma is bhakti. So being strict, Prabhupada gives very beautiful purpose in this section. When he says that in the purport, we'll come to that later, that somebody who performs their varnashram duties perfectly for 100 births, they are qualified to gain the role of Brahma. So it is not hierarchy or discrimination that is the varnashram that is presented by outside commentators. Krishna is presenting it as a means of purification, nothing more. Nothing less. So if we apply ourselves to Varnashram, Prabhupada says it doesn't matter if somebody is a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya or Shudra. The requirement is to perform your Varnashram duty sincerely. So that is the point we miss. Because of our conditioning, we get attached to the identity and forget the process of purification. So we are not here to, you know, be proud of our situation or in the hierarchy of Varnas. That's mundane. It is meant to springboard into transcendence. If we instead start living, then we have missed the point. So Prabhupada makes it very clear, it doesn't matter if you are a Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Shudra. So if Prabhupada is saying this so clearly, where is discrimination? Where is casteism? This is those who want to color our culture with their vested interest. So we should be very energetic to defend the true understanding of the message of Lord Krishna. So, these shlokas, as I have been requested to speak upon, from 26 to 32, they broadly cover two topics. One is the relationship between a guru and disciple, of how spiritual knowledge is transmitted. And the second part, of the supremacy of Lord Vishnu, or Vasudeva. So we'll touch upon these two topics in our discussion today. So here, why do you think in transmission of knowledge, words like words like Shila Sampanna are used. What do we mean by Shila Sampanna, we saw? Well behaved. Pritan, of very gentle behavior. So this is a huge dichotomy to our material education and understanding. Material education is a transaction where the student compensates the teacher for the knowledge that they expect to receive. The teacher accepts the compensation in return for the knowledge that he or she is going to impart. So it's a transaction, it's considered a delivery, a profession. There is no discussion of character. There might be a professor of philosophy who might be speaking on Sanatan Dharma in university, but at home, their private life may be very different, completely misaligned with what they are speaking. But that doesn't matter for them. They say, it's my personal life. So that non-alignment between personal and public life, or the message that we are talking about and the life we are living, that is not acceptable in Vedic civilized circles. We hear from those who have the Shila, the character to share that. So for us, more important than the message is the credentials of the person who is imparting that message. Therefore, the importance of parampara. That is what lends authenticity to the message. Right? Because now in today's world, where the whole world is connected through the internet, we have so many speakers and they are there to share their knowledge. Before we watch a video that we clicked on YouTube, there are advertisements. You have not been able to achieve this in life. There is a formula to do that, and you can get it only if you subscribe to my course. So what is the difference between such a teacher, or a, we cannot call them guru, such a coach, and Lord Shiva? Both of them are appearing in front of an audience without being asked for. Is it advertisement? Is it promotion? Or is there something else in Lord Shiva's appearance? That is what we'll see through the discussion today. First thing, so there are four factors to differentiate between promotion and compassion. Somebody who approaches an audience with an idea of self-promotion or self-interest, and someone who approaches an audience with an idea of compassion. So four differences we will see: intention, qualification, efficacy, and interest. So let's start with intention, which is also the most difficult to fathom. Because the premise is that the guru knows more than the disciple. So in that situation, how can a disciple gauge the intention of their mentor or their guru? Is it possible? We have not learned physics, but my teacher has mastered in physics. But how do I know whether their intention in teaching me physics is benign or devious? Physics is a material subject, so it wouldn't matter much. I'm talking of more subjects related to the way we live life, teaching principles. So how can we differentiate between, how can we discern if our teacher has the right intention or not? Can a disciple ever do that? What do you think?
I have heard that Srila Sanatan Goswami mentions that therefore, before selection of a guru, a disciple should spend 1 or 2 years, he says, just to find out that whether guru is talking as per Shastra, and his character is also as per Shastra.
Correct.
So that is how we understand whether it is his benevolent in teaching us by spending time with the Guru, sufficient time, he says.
Sure. Thank you very much. That is true for any relationship. Personality is what can be portrayed. Character is what has to be gauged. So when this urbanization happened in our cities, the culture moved from people who used to live in communities to urban setup. So in community, everyone would know each other. And they would know the character of a person because of historical experience. That is where spending time comes in. But in an urban setup, people don't even know who their neighbor is. So the mood shifts from character development to personality development. If there are so many people and nobody knows anyone, nobody knows each other, how can I make maximum impact? By creating a facade. Therefore, I develop my personality to portray who I am not. And every transaction, interaction is a sale. Can I convince the other person to get what I want out of them? So the other person doesn't have the background of the person and they fall victim. That is how fraud happens. It starts with an assumption of trust, but it has no backing of character. So that is what I'm trying to highlight, the difference between Vedic culture where everything is hinged on character versus modern civilization where it's about presentation and persuasion. If you are aggressive, if you are assertive, if you are loud, if you can quiet people down, they accept you as the right person. Truth is the daughter of time, they say. So as many times as you speak even a lie, it becomes true. So that is the dichotomy we are living in. Maharaj says, whenever there are conflict in devotee circles, the primary principle we should always remember that it is not really important what is right or wrong. That is technical. What is more important is what our culture is. So, while resolving any conflict, we should never deviate from Vaishnav etiquette and behavior. We can discuss, we can disagree, but we should not disrespect, because that also is coming in the verses ahead. Lord Shiva is saying, you prachetas are as good as the Lord, because devotees of Lord are like the Lord. They are of the same nature. So you are as good as the Lord and therefore I respect you. If Lord Shiva is respecting devotees, and of course he is the best devotee, and therefore Lord Shiva says, therefore I understand that you also respect me. So this culture of respect, this Vaishnav culture is more important than proving who's right and wrong. So Maharaj says, we are Vaishnavas first, and then we are Brahmana, Vaishya, Kshatriya, Shudra. Because sometimes we get into a mood of an administrator that I have to defend this. This is the right thing to do. But is it the right way to present it? So that is something which is tricky, and you know, we have to always remember it, remind ourselves about it. Right thing said in a wrong way or a wrong time is also wrong. So a culture of mutual respect is the basis of a Vaishnav community. Otherwise, we'll also become like urban civilization. We really don't know each other, we really don't respect each other, but we are just there to convince each other for our rights and our ideas. Only when we understand the other person better can we have natural respect for them. So that is about first point, intention. Can the student ever gauge the intention of the teacher? So as Madhav Gopal Prabhu shared, it's good to get to know your guru before you accept them. So it is said that a disciple can test their guru before initiation. And after initiation, only the guru has the right to test the disciple. We should not, after taking initiation, test a guru. That is aparad. That is Vaishnava aparad. That is guru aparad. So first qualification is intention. Second qualification, so we are discussing that if somebody comes to share a message with us, like in modern culture, there are so many people selling so many courses. And here, Lord Shiva is also appearing in front of prachetas that I will give you the best thing. This is what you need. So both are appearing in front of an audience with an intention to give them what they need. what is the difference between promotion and compassion? First we saw is intention. It's people who are in those two categories come with very different intention. One is for personal profit and promotion, and the other has the intention of compassion. Second metric that we can use to see whether it is a selfish presentation or a compassionate one is qualification. What do we hear from Bhagavad Gita about a qualified teacher and how to approach them? Tattvadarshihi. So what qualification is that? So if you cannot gauge the intention of the teacher, that's fair, it's not easy. But can you gauge their qualification? Yes, you can. By your understanding, by the opinion of other sadhus, and by the confirmation from scriptures, you can definitely gauge their qualification, whether they are tattvadarshi or not. Now, if they are tattvadarshi, is it good or bad for a student? It's excellent, but there are some disadvantages also. What can be the disadvantages of hearing, learning from a tattvadarshi? And this is not my concoction, this I'm speaking from Srila Baladev Vidyabhushan. What is the difficulty in learning from a tattvadarshi? Yeah. Yeah. They have seen the truth, they have realized the Atma, and they are constantly in touch with Ishvara. So they are like self-realized, God-realized. So how does it make learning difficult from such a teacher?
Something very similar lines. I don't know whether this is the answer.
Please. It's a discussion.
So, it is mentioned that if one is hearing from Mahabhagavat, sometimes it is difficult to relate. That's at one place I have read this. And if one is hearing from Madhyam Adhikari, one is easily able to relate what he is speaking. If Mahabhagavat is speaking, oh, you should, if this object is in front of you, you should immediately think of Krishna. Any black object comes in front of your mind. So you should immediately think of Krishna and become absorbed. So probably he may not be able to relate.
True.
But a Madhyam Adhikari will understand. He will say, okay, engage things in Krishna's service. Like something like
Correct.
That.
Correct.
That's what I understand.
Sure. No, that's good. Thank you. And because of the difference of their consciousness and level, sometimes it becomes difficult to relate. Anything else? Prabhu, you had something to share? Same thing? Just guess. You're good. One more thing I'm looking for. What is the nature of self-realized souls which is different from the marketeers of this world who are selling their courses? What is the difference between the two? Okay, they require surrender. A very good point, actually. Otherwise, I just require subscription. I don't require surrender. Correct. Correct. Whether you follow through on their instructions is also a factor in learning. One more thing which will... Sorry?
Seva service.
Seva is the way to approach, but what is the nature of tattvadarshi which differentiates them from teachers with not the best intentions, who have maybe even personal interest at heart? So they are also saying, we want to help you grow, we want you to discover the potential in you, unlock your potential. That is all right, but are you tattvadarshi? If you are tattvadarshi, they will have one hallmark quality. What is that? Which will be different, and you will be able to see that these people with selfish interest don't have that. What do you think? Not pampering. You're coming close now. Not pampering. Why would they not pamper? They have our real interest at heart, but they would not pamper because they are self-realized. The problem with tattvadarshihi is that they are indifferent to the world. You cannot bribe them, you cannot plead them, you cannot, request them. they are tatvadarshi, they are indifferent. So they will not be interested in having a following. They are indifferent. If I give a message, good. If I don't give a message, Krishna will arrange for some other ways. That indifference these people don't have, who are with selfish interest promoting themselves. They want everyone to have their way. So it's a very opposite, diametrically opposite nature. Indifferent and fruitive. These are two opposite things. So this we can gauge from the qualification of the teacher, whether they are having a fruitive idea or whether they are indifferent. Indifferent, you can test them if you stop hearing them. So this is a very beautiful seminar given by Sanat Kumar Prabhu on entitlement. So when we consider ourselves the giver, we expect reciprocation. And our further compassion is based on that reciprocation. If that reciprocation doesn't happen as per our expectations, we stop giving. We get frustrated ourselves that I gave them so much, still they are not learning, behaving, growing. So we should shift our paradigm from being a giver to being a receiver. By giving someone a good instruction, connection to Krishna, I am receiving the opportunity of becoming dear to Krishna, because Krishna says those who share my message are very dear to me. So that person is giving me an opportunity to engage in Krishna Katha, to be dear to Krishna, to have a sense of contribution. So when we become a receiver, it's very easy to act as a nimitta. That is what these tattvadarshis do. They act as a nimitta. If they can share, they will share. If they don't want to share, you cannot make them share. Shripad Ramanujacharya, when he received the secret mantra, he went on the roof of the temple and started shouting, giving it to everyone. Was he fruitive? Of course not. That is the quality of tattvadarshi. They are indifferent. But the beautiful part and the saving grace for us is that they have a second quality also, which is being merciful. So that saves the day for us. Because if they are so indifferent, they will just go to Vrindavan or Himalayas and we'll never be able to access them. But they are also merciful. That is the quality with which Lord Shiva is appearing before Prachetas. Prapannarthi hara. His nature is to drive away inauspiciousness. He is therefore called Shiva. Dharma vatsala. He is very much fond of religious principles, or those who follow religious principles. Anugrahaya. Anugrahaya charanti nunam bhutani bhavyani janardanasya. This is the hallmark quality of a tattvadarshi. So this you can gauge. A student can gauge in a teacher. Are they tattvadarshi? Are they detached? Are they attached? Are they merciful? Or are they fruitive? Badram, Lord Shiva says, I have appeared here for wishing your good fortune. And in 32, Anukrosha Hridaya, very kind-hearted. That is the nature of Lord Shiva and self-realized souls, tattvadarshi. So this was the second parameter we can see to understand if you are hearing from the right teacher. Third is, so we saw intention of the teacher, we saw qualification of the teacher. Now, shouldn't we come to the student and the process? So the process is, the third metric is efficacy. Is the process working for me? That is, phalena parichayet. I may not know the teacher, but if the process is giving me result, I am at the right place. Bhakti paresha anubhav. Bhakti is not a promise, like some faiths say. You will attain the kingdom of God. Bhakti says you will experience God now, as soon as you start practicing bhakti. Like a person who starts to eat, their hunger is immediately nourished. It's not a promise that your hunger will vanish tomorrow. So, efficacy is indicated by our experience. Is the process working for us? Are we getting a higher taste? Are we getting an experience? That proves the efficacy of the process. So it's very difficult. Again, here, the efficacy, the process may work for us. The course the people are selling, may work for some people. And here, the kind instructions of Lord Shiva may also work for someone. What is the difference? Those courses, those theories pamper to our lower nature. Capitalism. They say that everyone should pursue their self-interest. That is a theory by Adam Smith, which is a famous economist, on whose basis entire capitalism is resting. And since the 70s, that has become the prominent thought. And so many generations are living their lives on his philosophy. What will happen in the future? Another economist or philosopher will come, and the future generations will live their lives based on their philosophy. So we should not be fooled by the external social structure. We should try to see, are their philosophies appealing to our lower nature, greed, envy, lust, or are they appealing to our higher nature? Examples of philosophies will appeal to our lower nature are consumerism. You consume as much as you want. Don't care for environment. Capitalism. You care for your best interest. If everyone cares for their best interest, the market will be at its equilibrium. If the buyer wants to buy at the lowest price and the seller wants to sell at the highest price, so both are thinking of their selfish interest. So everyone should be selfish. So this is the theories. And it is very appealing to the false ego. Yeah, my self-interest. Consumerism. And in regards to an environment, there is something called anthropocentrism, which means the assumption that only human beings are of intrinsic value, everyone else has only incidental value. So we are the real enjoyers. Everything is existing for our enjoyment. That is anthropocentrism, because of which there is an ecological crisis. We don't respect the environment. We think it is a utility meant for our enjoyment. We don't consider how much time, effort, resources it takes for nature to grow one mango. We simply go and pay for it and think we are entitled to it. We are not. You are entitled to only as much as is set aside for you. Beyond that, it's greed. That is where capitalism fosters greed. That's why people like it. So do we want to follow philosophies which deepen our anarthas? Or do we want to follow philosophies which purify our anarthas? One example of a philosophy which appeals to our higher nature is Om Purnamada Purnamidam. All systems in this world are perfect and complete. Don't interfere. Carbon cycle is perfect. The food chain is perfect. You as a human don't need to interfere. Don't poke your nose and everything will be good. In fact, it will be better if humans don't interfere. The problem arises because we feel that the systems are not perfect. And the so-called development of human society is when humans manipulate matter. Because they think they are the doer. That is not true. They are Prakriti. So when Jiva starts to think I am Purusha and I should enjoy, and everything here is a utility, they have no value. That includes environment, that includes animals, that sometimes also includes other people in our lives. Maharaj says, things are to be used and people are to be loved. But what we see is now, things, people love things and use people. Again, how? It is coming from the selfish philosophy of anthropocentrism. My life is of real value. Everything else is to serve my interest. So Om Purnam Ada Purnamidam says that this universe is perfect and complete. We don't need your intervention. Come out of your hallucination of being an agent of development. You are only an agent of crisis. The mess the world is today is because of human interference. What does Bhagavad Gita say? Then what is the role of our life? Just to maintain our necessities. Maintain our body and pursue a spiritual life. Simple living, high thinking. Because that line is very difficult to draw. When it goes from need to greed. I was discussing with a friend who we studied MBA together. So he came here and we met literally like 12 years later. So he was sharing and he was talking the same principles. I was so happily surprised. How much do we need? My family says, let's buy another flat. What are our needs? We should know our needs, not get into the zone of greed. I was like, wow, he's very evolved. So, if we open ourselves to external promotion and messaging and agenda of the capitalists, they will always feel us, make us feel that we need more. That is in fact what we were taught in marketing. What is marketing? Marketing is the art of changing needs into wants and wants into desires. And when I saw it, I didn't feel like, yes, I will use this to make money. I felt, who am I going to cheat? My own mother goes for shopping. Do I want to cheat her? So when you don't have that sense of connection with the audience, you can exploit them. When you have a sense of connection with the audience, you cannot exploit them. That is the principle of yajna. See the interconnectedness in everything. Everything is connected to Krishna, the creator, and you are a part of the creator. So when we see that interconnectedness, that we are related, how can I exploit you? That is what yajna means. So, third was efficacy. Fourth is, now the only thing left is the student. Fourth is interest of the student themselves. Because if the student is not interested in real stuff, they can get cheated for anything. Cheaters and the cheated. If you want to be duped, there are many people waiting to do that. Some so-called religions, Prabhupada says, they only make a show of religion while they are actually pursuing material interests. Chaitanya Charan Prabhu says it becomes a backdoor for materialism. So you don't feel bad that you are being selfish, but you get the same facilities as a karmi. So it's very, you know, delicate to see that difference. So kama is their hrita jnana. Somebody who has lust in their hearts, they are bewildered themselves. Forget judging the teacher, they are themselves disillusioned. They can never get the right teacher, the right knowledge. So the interest of the student is also very important. So these four factors can help us decide, is that student, teacher, coach, disciple interaction spiritual, compassionate, or selfish and mundane? Intention, qualification, efficacy, and interest. Because when teachers who are appeal to our lower nature, you know, like they say, appeasing to everyone, that's a very good technique used by modern whatever, I don't want to say too much. Because they want everyone in the audience to feel good. And their only job is to stir up the emotions and the passion of the audience. You can achieve it. Go, if you had marketed 1,000 products, next year you can market 10,000. You can do it. So they say you can win, everyone can win. But if everyone could win, then how could we justify the statistical bell curve that we observe in society? Not everyone is successful. How many are above middle class? How many are in middle class? If everyone was successful, there would be no middle class. It's a trick of capitalism to trap people in middle class. There are documentaries on this. It's very difficult to go beyond it. They make everyone feel that they can reach the top, but it's not true. It's a trick. Only those who have the connections and the resources can reach there, not everyone. Irrespective of your merit, irrespective of your industriousness. So, those are the theories they sell, you can win. But who wins literally? They win, because their books get sold. What happens later is this, oh, you didn't practice it properly. I'll take one more course. I will tell you how to do that principle properly. So that is the, it's good. It's good that there are people who are concerned for the welfare of others. If they have learned something, they try to share it with others. But there is also a negative, dark side to self-help. That is to always keep people dependent. And people have that feel-good factor only till the time they are listening to that person. Because when they go back, they realize that I cannot practice it. Because the capacity to practice comes from sadhana, which comes from character, which comes from principle. So if you don't tell your audience to have any values, principles, character in life, they'll not be able to have a vessel to hold your teaching. So therefore, sadhana is important. We can study Gita, but how can we practice it? It requires sadhana, swadhyaya, sadachar. So that creates a vessel where we can follow that message. Otherwise, it's good to hear, and you feel good only when you are hearing it. In fact, you feel miserable than before, because now you feel, it's like an addiction. Till the time you are taking it, you're feeling good. So that is what we should be careful of. Are they appeasing our greed or arrogance and lust and saying, you can, all of you can achieve everything? How is it possible? How can everyone achieve everything if they simply desire and they are sincere? There are 5 causes of action we see in Bhagavad Gita. Right? 18:14. So there is Adhishtanam, there is Karta, there is Karanam, there is Cheshta, there is Daiva. So this wisdom somebody gains, then they'll not be cheated by such people. That whatever you wish for, if you wish intensely, you will gain it. Okay, that is one part, Cheshta. But what about Daiva? What about Adhishtanam? What about Karta? So that is a different discussion. I mean, should we take that in a bit? Let's spend a few minutes on understanding the 5 causes of action. Adhishtanam, correct me if I go wrong anywhere. Anyone? The learned sages. Adhishtanam refers to our body or our situation. So how do we gain that? How do we gain this body? It is basically prarabdha karma. It is due to our previous actions that we have a current body, a current situation. But the difference is that that is not all in all. There is something called swabhava also. Or there is something called free will also. So people are very eager to know through different means, by planning or by, you know, stars. What is going to happen in my life? What is this saying? That can only show you where you will be situated depend on your karma. That's it. Karma puts us in unavoidable circumstances. But how we react to those circumstances is not predestined. It is our free will. So rather than focusing on where we land up because of our karma, let's study dharma and study scriptures using which we can come out of that unavoidable circumstances. This is what Srila Valadeva Vidya Bhushan says. And to do that, of course, you require Nishkam Karma Yoga and worship of Krishna. But more importantly, you need a devotee to help you. Otherwise, this remains in theory only. So, to change the course of your life, a devotee intervention is mandatory. So, first factor is Adhishtanam, our situation. That will decide if we are successful or not. If somebody doesn't have a body because of their previous karma to be an athlete, as much as they wish or desire or work, they cannot be a successful athlete. They just don't have the right Adhishtanam, the place, the situation, the Karanam also. So body here would refer to instruments of action. So our instruments are not sufficient to help us succeed in certain ways. Somebody is physically fit, they have instruments which can make them successful in physical affairs. Somebody who's intellectual, they have instruments which can help them be successful in intellectual pursuits. So this is Adhishtanam and Karanam. Third is Karta. Karta basically is soul, when the soul considers itself to be the doer. I am the Karta. It is basically an Upadhi. The problem with falling prey to these philosophies, which is simply sense gratification, which is also what scriptures are telling us to come out of. Come out of your desire for sense indulgence. Because that, we are conditioned, we are covered by Maya. Having a desire for sense indulgence brings out that, it stirs Maya into action. It invokes Maya. That yes, now he's desiring to indulge in sensual activities, now cover them as being the doer, enjoyer. So Maya kicks in when we have a selfish desire for sensual gratification. That is why we are shown the path of Nishkama Karma. That don't do anything with a desire, because if you do anything with a personal desire, you will get covered by Maya, you will get implicated and you will end up in bondage. Rather, try to act without desire, basically without expectation, phala, tyaga, and without a sense of doership, without an identity. without expectations, without identity. So does it mean we'll become a loser in life if we don't have expectations and identity? Definitely not. Our perspective will change. We'll become smarter and stronger than those who are basing their lives on selfish desires. How? If somebody is pursuing things not based on outcome, but based on goals, that is detachment. That is nishkama, the power of nishkama karma yoga. You are doing something because you have decided that this is my goal. That is nishkama karma yoga. Acting out of outcome is sakam karma. So will things go our way always? Definitely not. When we don't see the results of our effort, we fail, what will be the response of a sakama karmi? Dejection, disappointment, depression. For a nishkam, nothing. I was not attached to outcomes anyways. I'm attached to my goal. So goal is where the ambition is. And in fact, great saints and sages have been able to do the biggest change and help in this world because they had this perspective that I have goals to help society. I'm not outcome oriented. If we are outcome oriented, we can only achieve that much. Second is when we see others doing nishkama karma or sakama, we should know how to appreciate. We should appreciate people not for their achievements, because achievement depend on these five factors. They might have done their best, but still they were not successful. Isn't this theory very limiting? That is sakama karma, considering oneself the doer. What is the higher state of being? Nishkama karma. I don't appreciate you for your achievement, but I appreciate you for your commitment to the seva. You are such a committed devotee, Prabhu. You have been taking care of this department for so long. So smarter people don't emphasize result as much as commitment. So this is a nishkama perspective. So adhishtanam, karta, karanam, cheshta. Finally, the endeavor that a person gives, that okay, I try to do what I want to be successful at. That's only one of the five factors. So it's an average. It's a weighted average. It's not equal, simple average. Cheshta is not 20%. The fifth cause is called the super cause, which is Daiva. Daiva has 80-90% weightage and everything else is... This weightage, I don't know. Can you comment? Is there a weightage to these five causes of action, or there's nothing mentioned about it?
Actually, the Daiva is considered the...
Yeah, predominant.
By and large.
Exactly. Like, super cause.
There is no weight assigned to it, but particular, but it's considered the...
Heavy weight. Correct. Thank you. So that is what we should try. We should try to go from a mood of achievement to a mood of service. That is the mood in which Lord Shiva is appearing, out of compassion. In the introduction video of Govardhan Eco Village, guest mentions about Maharaj, that he is very passionate about reaching out to others. And compassion is the best passion. That sentence is so strong, that we think we can achieve things if we are driven by selfish motives, our ambitions, our gain. No, we will reach, there might be a start to that, but that curve changes. And if we remain selfish, especially for senior responsibilities, higher responsibilities, and higher levels of leadership, in higher stages of our life, selfishness can only help us a little bit. Then the graph changes, it gets a different slope. At that level, you have to be selfless. So compassion is the best passion. That is the mood with which Lord Shiva is appearing. And he's compassionate, kind, to share his message with the Prachetas for their self-interest. Have you ever got this feeling? Somebody is new and they are going through their journey of Krishna consciousness. And you are observing them. You are seeing them hitting obstacles, going into dangerous areas, associating with people who may not be the best. How do you feel in your heart? You feel concerned, you feel compassionate, right? That is the mood with which Lord Shiva is appearing before the Prachetas. He has nothing to gain from appearing. Indifference of the self-realized. So we'll conclude here. Unless someone has any questions, comments. Yes, Prabhu.
Just the last one, I had something just came to my mind when you talked about Daiva and the other things and the influence, how much weightage they have. So I just remembered one instance from Ramayana. Actually speaking, depending on the situation, it is a service that drives whether one should become passive or active. Like one should passively accept or actively involve. That depends on the service. Like for example, I will give two contrasting examples which came to my mind. When Yudhishthira Maharaj, in both cases, when he lost in the gambling and even after a whole massacre, like he just accepted this is Daiva. Of course, a devotee can think, like devotee like Yudhishthira Maharaj thinks that it's all Daiva. He doesn't even say that Krishna arranged this in my life. He's taking responsibility and he's thinking that, okay, this is what it is there because of Daiva, which I have to tolerate now. I am in the forest now for 12 years, which I need to tolerate. Can't do anything about it like that. We can contrast this with when Lord Ram was banished. It was announced that now he has to be banished for this 14 years. So then Lord Ram is trying to pacify Lakshmana, saying that, okay, this is arranged by destiny. So Lakshmana says, weak people talk about destiny. Strong people don't talk about destiny. You do something. I will do. If you don't do, I will do it. Like, I will fight with all the soldiers and make you the king. So it depends on the service of what the service requires.
Correct.
If the service requires one to be passively accept in certain situation, then one accepts destiny. But in case of Lakshman, when it requires that, you know, you push on for the service, then one should be flexible to switch to that mode also.
Correct.
That's what thought came to me. In Parishad Maharaj, two cases in his own life. When it came about himself, he said that, okay, this is arrangement. But when it came about this torturing of cow and bull, he didn't say, oh, it is destiny.
Correct.
He just took action. So within one person also, we see two different responses at two different times.
Correct.
That's one thought just. Thank you.
Yeah, that's very true. You know where that comes from? That comes from the level of consciousness one is in. So yes, depends on the seva, but also depends on the person. So it is true for conversations. We had a seminar on hermeneutics, you know, how to discuss scriptures. If both parties are interested in having a deeper understanding, they should both be constructively engaged in a conversation, not to prove their point or not to assassinate someone's character on the pretext of using philosophy. So there's difference between jalpa, prajalpa, Vitanda, Vada. So what you're saying comes from the place where, how is that person situated? Its internal qualities. That is the key point of being situated in sattva. What is the nature of sattva? It's all liberating. There's like freedom. So in all these circumstances, somebody who is more evolved has the power to choose. So an evolved soul like Yudhishthira Maharaj can choose whether he wants to be aggressive, passive, assertive, neutral. Whereas somebody who is not evolved to that consciousness will be pushed to do only what they have. So sattva, and definitely Shuddha Sattva, you have all the choices on the table. Does this need an aggressive communication or aggressive leadership? Does it need passive? Because all have their advantages. In being aggressive, we crush the needs of others to get our rights through. So it might be help, might serve you now, but people will distance themselves from you very soon. Nobody will like you. And the opposite is passive. Should I do nothing? Let it be. That also has its dangers. You are reveling in the ego of being non-doer. You expect people to understand your rights. They will not. You have to speak up. And assertive is, You present your rights, but you also respect others' rights. That is constructive conversation. That is vada or samvada. So who can do this? Somebody who is more evolved, obviously. So they have, people with higher consciousness in sattva, shuddha sattva, they have choices. Okay, now three options are on the table. How should I respond? Those who are not evolved, they don't respond, they react. That is the whole journey of spirituality. To give us options. Because there is no right or wrong. It's so circumstantial. What is the right thing to do? Dharma is very guhya. Thank you for bringing up that point. Very thoughtful. Anything else?
Thank you very much, Prabhu. I just have, of course, not a question, it is again a comment about the compassion part. Yeah, if you have compassionate, that's very nice, but it's not so easy to be compassionate. But if you're working for someone who is compassionate, then it's as good as you are compassionate. That is one. And about the first one, intention, in a guru-disciple relationship, suppose if there is some doubts about whether the intention or... Of course, one thing is very clear, unless there is some gross violation, you know, some regulative principles, then it's very obvious. But if it is not, but the disciple, if he is very sincere and he just has doubts, but he continues with his sincerity, the Lord protects him. Even if the intention is not something transcendental, it is something material.
Yeah.
But is the disciple, what is his reciprocation? If he is very sincerely, with a lot of, you know, even if there is some doubts, he continues, the Lord protects him and he guides him accordingly, or something becomes very clear in the course of time. So when you said about the intention part.
Yeah. Absolutely. That is how a guru is supposed to be a medium, a transparent via medium, a representative of Krishna. So more one is transparent, the more the disciple is not depending on the guru, but on Krishna. So in fourth chapter, Krishna says, work does not bind me. Why are we in this samsara chakra? Because any karma or vikarma that we'll do gives a reaction, and to have go through the fruits of that reaction, we have to again stay in this material realm. So what you said in the first part, we should do it for somebody who is compassionate. That is the safest position. Maharaj says, let me be an instrument of compassion in your hands. The dear devotees of Krishna, can we be compassionate? Very difficult. Can we be instruments of compassion? Why not? In the capacity that we have. So not every instrument is the best instrument. One knife can slice an entire, you know, thick, and other knife may not even cut a fruit. But both are instruments and we should be happy. Again, commitment, not achievement. So we should try to have a perspective of that. And Krishna says, if you work for me, because I don't have desires, I don't have attachment, you will not get reaction to your work. That is bhakti. That is devotional service. That is akarma. Nishkama karma yoga, yajna. So same, if we can align with the vision of a compassionate, self-realized person, we get the same benefits. And what will happen to a person who is not in a good situation in terms of knowing the intention of their teacher, if they are sincere, they are actually depending on the guru, because the guru is supposed to be transparent representative of Krishna. So if they continue doing that, Krishna will protect. Dharma rakshati rakshati. It's not the person who is going to protect, it's dharma who is going to protect, and dharma can protect in various ways. So we generally feel we should have a one-to-one correspondence. I invested in this person should reciprocate. I invested somewhere, but results could come from somewhere else. So, a couple of thoughts.
just on a lighter note, like when someone asked this question to Maharaj, I want to be the best businessman. So he said, you work for the best person. He said, I want to be the best businessman. So you work for the best person. So you become the best businessman.
Or the best cause. You know how Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj defined preaching? in terms of, you know, being a transparent environment. He said preaching is to not come between a jiva and Krishna. Just get out of their way. Connect and disappear. Problem starts when we start to get into the picture. And jiva, me, I am your savior. Problem for both the parties start from there.
This is a very common thing. No? Why do I need a guru? So actually, guru is not an obstacle. He's just removing the obstacles between you and Krishna.
That's a very thankless job if you think. You are conditioned and the guru is selflessly coming between you and your vasanas, you and your lower nature. And we'll not be able to appreciate that, like a doctor who is giving a bitter pill. So we should understand how selfless and thankless job a guru, a mentor, a coach is doing. They're coming between a rock and a hard place. They'll get smashed from both sides. That is why it requires that potency too. The purity is the force. Not everyone can save everyone. Okay. Thank you very much. Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Nitai Gaur Premanande Vancha Kalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhubhyaiva cha, Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namah, Ananta Koti Vaishnavrinda ki jai.
Thank you, Prabhu. Your presence makes me feel...